So we are holding on Kuf Tes Amud Aleph, about halfway down the narrow lines. So to recap, we mentioned in the Mishnah you had a case where a person was mekabel a field for a few years. We say he's not entitled to kodesh shikma, he's not entitled to take branches from the sycamore tree that can be used to make beams, because they take years to grow, they take 7 years to grow back, and therefore if he has the field for less than 7 years, he's going to be returning the field and the tree in worse condition than it started out. We started with a machlokas, Abaya and Rava. Does that apply? What about the shvach shikma? What about is he entitled to the improvement in the value of the shikma tree itself? It becomes fatter, for example. It's worth more. So we had a machlokas. Abaya said that he is entitled to his share of that shvach, and Rava said that not. So we were in the middle of a braisa, so we may as well start from the beginning of the braisa again. Toshma ha-makabal sada machaberet. The line begins mata. About, like I said, about halfway down the narrow lines. So, Toshma ha-makabal sada machaberet v'yigia shviyas. If a person is makabal a field from somebody else, and shmita comes, shomingloi, then we evaluate for him. We need to figure out we need to evaluate the amount of the shvach that he's going to get. So first of all, before we get into the actual question, we have to figure out there's something wrong with the braisa. Shvius mikomaka ara. Shvius doesn't remove the ownership of the land. The kablonos or papyrus or whatever Yovel does, but Shmita doesn't. So it's not like at the end, it's not like Shmita comes and therefore his chakirus or kablonos or what have you is automatically over. Now, Elaim hamakabal sadam chavere vigia Yovel shaman. No, we have to fix up the braisa and say that it didn't mean Shmita, it meant that when comes Yovel, then we have to evaluate for him. But we still have to ask back, at the Yovel Mikol Machto Kablonus, does Yovel cancel an agreement of Kablonus? Litzmisa Samar Rahman. The Torah says that Yovel is only meant to cancel a sale that otherwise would have been forever.
Not Kablonus.
But not Kablonus, which is something temporary anyway. Or like, for example, the case that the Gemara talks about elsewhere, where if you sell a field for 60 years, Shmita doesn't cancel it. Yeah.
Beyond the Yovel.
Right. Ella Ema, so no, we have to fix up the braisa yet again. If a person buys a field from somebody else and then Yovel comes, then we have to evaluate the not Hamakabel, but rather Halakeach. So he buys a field from somebody else, and Yovel comes, so then it's going to be returning to the original. It's going to be returning.
Means what?
Makabel would mean that he's that he's renting it. He's an aureus, he's a choicher, he's whatever. Yeah, he has temporary usage of it. You were talking about halakeach. Then we have to evaluate for him the value of the improvements in the land. Now, what do we have to evaluate? The chitema hochinami shaman lebi yakov asoka. So you can ask. Maybe it means, like we explained the previous braisa, that it just means you evaluate the value of the vegetables or beets or whatever that are growing there that are not ready to be harvested yet because they'll spoil before you take them to market. You have to ask, Silka b'yakob b'yovel efkerahu. Such things that grow during Yovel, a hefker anyway, all the produce that grows during Yovel, it's just like Shmita. It's hefker, yeah. So Ela lab shvach shikma. Doesn't the braisa then have to be talking about that we're talking about, the improvements and things like the shikma, and therefore we see you do evaluate that when it comes to, and now in this case, the person bought the field, but because it wasn't a choicher or anything like that, but since we're assuming that since the sale gets undone by Yovel, it was a temporary rental. It amounts to, I rented the field for 30 or 40 or whatever it is years, and now comes Yovel, and the rental period is over, and you get it back. And we're saying that we have to evaluate something, presumably the shvach shikma.
The answer is two. What is the shikma again?
A shikma is a sycamore tree. So a sycamore tree does, well, it's a type.
Look on your phone.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Thank you.
The truth of the matter is, I'm not so sure. Usually we do translate a shikma as a sycamore tree. However, a sycamore tree does produce fruit, and based on all of the Gemara, Rashi explains over here at the beginning, in the Mishnah, Eitz Srachu, it's a non-fruit-bearing tree. We'll see as we go through the Gemara, a sycamore is a fruit-bearing tree. So lav davka, maybe a shikma here means some other species that resembles a sycamore, but is not quite. I don't know. Okay, anyway. So the answer is Abaya gave the answer, how would Rava explain this? That shiny hosom is different in that case. You have a special reason why by Yovel it's different. The Omak Rava Yotza Mimka Bayis, because the Pasuk says that by Yovel the sale of the house goes back, implying Mimka Choser Shvach Eine Choser. Mimka Choser Shvach Eine Choser, which implies that only a sale is undone during Schmidt during Yovel, but Shvach is not undone. So we don't go. So yes, in that case, in other words, that's what we're talking about. In other words, so the guy bought a property. Over the years, the shikma or whatever it is in it has improved. He is entitled to keep that shvach. We don't make him return that to the other guy. So therefore, in the oval, that's specific to the oval. We can't generalize from that. So the question is, why not? V'nigma mine, why taka don't we use that as a basis for saying the same way as it works by yovel, it works everywhere else? Why shouldn't we say it's binyanav? The reason is hasan zvini malyu. Because when it comes to a field that's returned by yovel, your initial assumption is incorrect. You assumed, the Stama de Gemara assumed that, whoever asked the question, the Makshin, assumed that it's considered like a rental because it's being undone by yovel. No, it was a real honest-to-goodness sale. V'yovel afkas de malki. Yovel is just the king, the Eivishter, so to speak, overrides it and says, this sale that you made that would have been a permanent sale is now not permanent. But in other words, it's overridden by government law, basically. It's like eminent domain, sort of. But it's not like we can say it was lachatchila supposed to only, it was lachatchila like a rental. Lachatchila, it was a sale. But it's a sale which the Eivishter says has a time limit to it. It's not like a rental. So therefore, fine, when it comes to a sale, sure, the guy bought the property, he produced shvach in it, or shvach was produced on its own, he's entitled to keep it. When he returns when the Eivishter makes him give back the field, he doesn't make him return the shvach as well. You can't generalize from that to a case where they, lachatchila, made an arrangement which is only going to be for a certain number of years, just like a case.
So it's Moshe
Mishinah. We learn it from the pasuk, but it applies only to that case. It only applies to a sale which is being undone by yovel. You can't generalize from it to a rental. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara tells a story in a case in this connection. Rav Papa Kabel Aralas Basta. Rav Papa one time was Makabel some land. He was going to work it as a cholcher or as an artist. In order to plant aspasta in it. So aspasta we've learned a few times, alfalfa or some other, well, in modern Hebrew, aspasta means alfalfa. I don't know if in the Gemara it does, but whatever. It's some kind of herb that's used for animal food, yeah. Okay. Kodcho batali. Some palm trees started growing in that land. So some of the area that should have been for aspasta is now being occupied by palm trees. Kikomistalik, eventually when the rental time was over and Rafafa was going to be leaving, Amalahu Havali Shvacha. So he says to the owner of the field, give me the shvach. The trees are worth a certain amount. You're gonna have trees over there in your property which are worth something on an ongoing basis. Give me a portion of that. I mean, by that logic, if you're going to say like that, what about if you were to say, what if the palm tree was there to begin with and it became fatter over the years? Are you also going to say that you'd want the shvach? Luchura, in other words, if you were makabel, forget about you were makabel the whole field. Let's say you were makabel only trees. The deal is you're going to work the trees, you're going to take care of them, you're going to water them, whatever, and you're going to split the profits, you're going to pay him a certain rental in dates or whatever it is. If the tree gets fatter over the years, are you going to demand that's a shvach that you share in? No, you have the peiros. You have the peiros. That's the purpose that you did the thing for, is for the peiros. You don't get shvach of the fact that the tree itself became bigger.
You would only get the shvach if you buy the land?
No. Well, he's asking, in other words, like this. When you become an artist or a cholcher or whatever for trees,
the trees,
and you're entitled to a certain percentage or whatever it is of the fruit. You're not entitled to the fact that the tree has grown bigger. That doesn't, yeah. The answer. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. Rapapa says in that case, the person, when he goes to become a choicher, he's not going intending that he's going to get his share of the shvach of the tree got fatter, because mainly he's there to get the peiros of the tree. In this case, I lachatchila went in and started taking care of this field, having in mind that whatever grows in it, I'm going to take care of, and I'm going to share with the shvach. In other words, that should be considered. I should just like I'm entitled to the shvach within the akbasta, so also anything else. That was the idea. That was the deal. No, that's the idea. No. So the question is, kaman kabayadom v'shvach shikma yeshloi. Are you telling me then that Rapapa is saying that only like a baya, who says that you're entitled to shvach shikma? According to Rava Lachora, he has no basis for his claim anyway. And usually the halacha is like Rava, of course. Shikma is a sycamore tree. We learned in the Mishnah that it's a tree that produces thick branches. We talked yesterday. It's a tree that produces thick branches, heavy branches, that are worth money. Yeah, yeah. So the answer is afilu teima k'rava. No, you could answer that even Rav Papa is going like Rava. Hosam lasle p'seda, because the difference is, in the case of the Mishnah, the shikma growing and improving does not cause you a loss. In other words, you have the shikma tree is growing there, fine, but you still have, you can still plant, you can still plant the land, not never mind depleted, the land is still available there, the tree is growing near the land is still available for plowing and planting and whatever.
The thick branches make a lot of shade, so the sun doesn't
shine. No, but that's, no. Hacha ikapseda, over here, on the face of it, there's a loss. Amalei, so Rav Shisha asks him, what's the loss? Yeah, yodad aspasta, what are you arguing? There's a loss that you, this space where the tree is located, you could have planted aspasta over there, like in the rest of the field. Fine, shkil yodad aspasta vazil. Fine, then you're entitled to that amount of aspasta. You're entitled to reimbursement for that amount of aspasta that should have grown where the trees are, but not the shvach of the trees as a whole. Amalei, Rav Papa answers him, I'm not kukma rishka rabbi. Yes, but I didn't necessarily have to plant aspasta over there. I could have planted over there good quality karka and good quality saffron, which we learned the other day. It's worth a lot of... One second. The Rashba brings that, in fact, it's not just Rav Papa saying I could have, but he actually planned to do that. We've learned before in previous Mishnayos that if you want to plant something that depletes the soil more than something else, you're not allowed to do that unilaterally. But it's something that doesn't. If it's something that doesn't deplete the soil more, and in this case it doesn't, and it's worth a lot more, you're allowed to. You're entitled to. He would have been entitled to actually do that. To say, most of this field I'm going to plant aspasta, and part of it I'm going to set aside and I'm going to plant kurkuma over there. I'm going to plant saffron over there. He would have been allowed to do that, and in fact he did plan to do that. When he's saying that I could have planted kurkuma rishka over there, he doesn't just mean theoretically I could have. That's it. The Rashba explains. He's saying, I've actually planned to plant it over there. Wait, no, so therefore he's arguing, so there is a real loss over there. Amalei, but Rav Shisha tells him, Golas adaitach de la mishka v'itzalukei abdes. No, in that case, but you're mentioning kukum arishka. But kukum arishka is something which gets harvested every year. It's not something that stays there permanently. If you had said that you planted, if you had said, for example, that you planned to plant a different kind of tree there, which will stay there on a long-term, permanently, on a permanent basis, then you have an ability to say, okay, I lost out. Instead, only date palms grew over here, which are where the fruit is worth a lot less. Then you could argue, fine, you, the owner of the field, are going to retain these trees because they're going to be there even after I'm gone. Therefore, I'm entitled to a share in the shvach of them. But over here, you're saying that you would have planted something which anyway is going to be harvested at the end of the year and would have to be replanted fresh the next year. Therefore, effectively, so what does it mean in terms of the trees? It means you're looking at it from the point of view that all you want to do is chop down, not chop down, but whatever, remove the trees and take them with you. Fine. Golas adaitach, you have shown by your statement about kurkuma, the lemishkal based galuki abdus, that you intended to take these trees and to take this produce, whatever it was, if it had been kaukum or in this case if it's trees, it's the looky obvious. You did it in order to do that and then go away. Fine, shka kurkumarishka. Fine, you can take the value of kurkumarishka, but the aimlach the zil, and then you go. Aimlach ela dmei eitzim bovad. In other words, all you're entitled to, not the full value of kurkumarishka, all you're entitled to is you can treat these trees as if they were kurkumarishka, as if they were something that was meant to be taken away and removed. Meaning you're entitled to that, to the value of them as firewood. So Tosfos, not as shvach. Now Tosfos talks about over here. We have to be talking about. Tosfos says these trees couldn't have been replanted someplace else. If they could be replanted someplace else, then it's not really the same thing as cowcrane. That Tosfos gives two explanations. The first explanation is if they're trees that could have been suitable to uproot from here and replant someplace else, he'd have the ability to claim that. But in this case, it so happens these trees were not the type. If you were to uproot them from here, they'd die. Therefore, all he's entitled to them is firewood, because that's all he's saying. If I would have used them, I would have just plucked them. The other answer that Tosfos says is that that Tosfos gives two answers. One is that these happen to be trees that couldn't have been transplanted. The other is, even if they could theoretically be transplanted, but by him mentioning cowcorn, which is not something that's meant to be transplanted from one place to another, he demonstrates by that he's not concerned with the replanting value of them. He's concerned with the value of them as a crop that can be harvested. Fine, then in that case, they're a crop that can be harvested for wood. That's all you're entitled to.
Oh, so even if he could replant
them. Even if he could replant them, but still he's only entitled to the value of them as firewood. Yeah.
By his choice of choosing
the word kurkumarishka, by choosing the phrase that he would have planted saffron over there, which is worth a lot. Yeah.
So the maskana is, in other words,
the maskana is that he's not entitled to the shvach of the tree. He's not entitled to get reimbursed for the fact that the trees make the land more valuable, because all he's going to do, effectively, is he's going to chop down the trees. Fine, you're entitled to take the trees and use them as firewood, but that's all you're entitled to. You're not entitled to leave them there and say to the guy, I want you to compensate me for the fact that they increase the value of the land.
In the future,
you can't do that. Another case, Rabbi Barabaya Kabal Ara. Rabbi Barabaya one time accepted to take care of some land, again, as an artist or a chaycher or what have you. The Ahadale Mishunisa. Now it happened, this land had around it a ridge of rocks or dirt or whatever around the edges of it. And zradza trees started growing on it. Zradza in English is called sorb apples or whatever. They're some type of fruit where the fruit itself has some minimal value. It's a wild fruit, and the wood has some value also. Kikomistalik, when he was leaving the employment, he says to them, "Give me my shvach. These trees have grown over here. This is an improvement to the field. I should be entitled to some shvach from that."
Did you do anything to make it grow?
The pastures, he took care of them. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about in this whole story. That's a guy, yeah.
Because before there was only an edge.
Right, before there was only an edge. Now there's trees. Omer a papi. However, a papi says to him, Mishum de osisu mi muloi amrisu muli muyasa. What is this? Because you come from muloi, therefore you're saying muyasa words. What a muloi? Muloi, Rashi says, means a weak family. Rabbi Abaya, we know the famous Gemara that Abaya and Rava, were descended from Eli. Eliyah Kohen, the famous family that had a curse on them that their descendants are going to die young. Abaya and either Rava or Rava, the different yourselves. Anyway, Rabbi Abaya is the son of Abaya. He's descended from Eli, which is a weak family in the sense that they have this curse resting on them, and their descendants are going to die young unless they do Torah and Milas Chasadim, as the Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah, also in Yevamos. Yeah, so he's saying
because
it's children, Chofni and Pinchas, they disrespected the Avodah and the Beis Mikdash. They would grab their portions of the korbanos before the fat was finished being brought on the mizbeach. They would mishahet es kineihem when women came with birds for korbanos for korban yoldos or whatever. They'd take their time bringing them, so the women have to stay there overnight instead of being able to go right back home. So anyway,
I forgot about that.
Okay, all right. Anyway, so he tells him, because you come from muloi, because you come from a weak family, therefore you say mili muyasa. So Rashi over here translates muyasa as like humpbacked words. Like defective words. Defective, yeah. That's a different other explanation of what exactly muyasa. Yeah, sort of hacking a Chinook. Yeah, on the side over here it brings from the Aruch that muloi is the name of a place where we know that many Bnei Eli live there. Whatever. The point is, in other words, you're giving a svara that's not right. Yeah, it's sort of like hacking a Chinook, yeah. Even Rapapa was only talking in a situation where there was some loss. He could have planted a spaster or kurt or karkoim or what have you there. Hacha might say this. Here there's no loss. It was the edge of the field anyway. Nothing is being planted there. You have no right to demand any shvach.
Why? Just simply because it's the edge.
Because of the edge of the field. Because nothing was growing there anyway. It was just a ridge around there. Yeah, it was just there. Okay. So now we're going to be talking about various dinim that are various dinim as far as when you have somebody. Now we're going to be talking about you have a specific kind of job which they had in those days called a shafla. Shatola, I guess, technically, whatever. That is like this. So we have, so far, we talked about an oris and a choycher. Now you have this shafla is sort of a variation of an oris. Usually an oris is, you have already an established field or vineyard or what have you, and you hire somebody to work it, and you'll split by percentages. That's a regular oris. The shasla has the job of actually planting the vines in the first place, or planting any other kind of trees in the first place, and then to continue taking care of them. And again, you work by percentages.
This guy has a double job.
So he has sort of a double job.
A special artist.
It's a specialized artist, right. Yeah, if you look in Rashi, the last line of the narrow lines, you'll see Rashi defines it very, very, very succinctly. Nateya Kerem Bakauka Balabayas, his job is to plant a vineyard on the Balabas's property, but all of this Oris Kalayom, and then he's to be an Oris for it as long as the vineyard is still going on. Venoto Mechtsa Paris, and he collects tax of Paris. As opposed to an Oris who doesn't plant the vineyard, who doesn't plant the vines, he comes and finds ready made vines. Ready? Okay.
Just waters.
So, Rav Yosef Havayahu Shasla. So Rav Yosef had this Shasla who was working for him. Shachiv, the guy passed away. The Shavat Chamisha Chasnevasa, and he left over 5 sons-in-law, who all wanted to take over the job. Omar, so Rav Yosef says that's a problem. Up to now, I only have to deal with 1 person. Now I'd have to be dealing with 5 people. And it's even worse because up until now, you only have 1 person. He knows there's nobody else to rely on. So there's no hefset. He knows if a job has to be done, he's got to do it. There's nobody else. Now you have 5. They're each going to depend on the other, as we know. Too many cooks spoil the broth, you know. So everyone's going to depend on somebody else to do it.
The older one,
yes, no, all of them wanted to. Yeah, no, all of them. Well, master really, so it's going to cause me a hefted. So therefore, I can't have them anymore. Mephoshim actually discussed what would have been the din, actually. Well, we'll see in a second. What would have been the din if there was only Taka one of them wanted to take over? Does he have to keep him on, or does he not necessarily have to? Okay, anyway.
On the other hand, he's only responsible to him, Meshubatim, until he dies.
That's one way of looking at it. Wait. Okay. Amalahu, so Rav Yosef says to these 5 guys, Ishaklitu Shivchaichu Mistalkitu, if you guys want to take the shvach that has been accumulated up until this point, and then you leave, and I'll go hire myself another shasla, mutav, then good. V'iloy, and if you don't want to do that, if you insist on that you're entitled to continue the job, then I will send you away. I'll fire you without even giving you a shvach. And I would have the right to do that to Amr of Yehuda, Tamer of Hunavi, Tamer of Nachman, because of Yehuda, or some said of Huna, or some said of Nachman said, High shasla de shachiv. If a shasla passes away, yoshim delay mistalkin lehu b'lo shvacha. His yoshim can be fired without even giving them the shvach. However, the Gemara says v'lav milsi. This is not correct. Now, what do we mean by it's not correct? So Tosfos on Amud Beis says it actually. No. So Tosfos on Amud Beis actually brings that it means none of them, not Rabbi Yehuda, not Rabbi Nachman, not Rabbi Huna, never actually said such a thing. Rabbi Yosef only said it to them in order to scare them off, basically.
Oh, wow.
Which he would have had still. He would have had the ability to tell them that he wants to fire them because he's not obligated to take five when they could cause him a real hefsid. However, Tosfos asked in that case, why do we have the statement Rabbi Yehuda or some say Rabbi Huna or some say Rabbi Nachman? That doesn't sound like something that was made up. But Tosfos says, but Joseph, maybe you could say that Rabbi Yosef only mentioned one of them, but later on when they recorded this in the Gemara, they weren't sure which of the 3 Amoraim he had quoted. But there's different other. There's different.
How can he say 4 things on behalf of other
people? Right, that's a lie.
It's a big question.
Because maybe it could be that he generalized from something that they said, for example. But anyway, there are different other explanations among Rishonim. Among them is that he does that when we say v'lav milsi, he doesn't mean he doesn't have the right to fire them, but it means he does have the right to fire them, but he does have to give them the shvach. That's what he's telling them. I'll give you your shvach and get out of here. So in that case,
he's saying that in the name of Rabbi.
No. So then, no. But then, according to that, v'lav milsi, he means it's not correct to say that you're allowed to send that you're. To, it's not correct to say that you can. That no. So according to that, no. So what would it mean that you're v'lav milsi? He wouldn't mean no. It would mean the basic din is correct. You are allowed to send them away without shvach, but not maybe for the reason that he said, but rather for a different reason because they're going to call them a hefted or whatever. In other words, that's the point. So if you have only one who's going to be taking over, do you have to take him and do you have to take him on, or are we saying that not? Maybe v'lav milsi he means in a case like this where there were 5 of them, then fine, you don't have to keep them on. But the basic concept that if there's only one that you shouldn't have to keep them, that not. There's different explanations in the potion. Anyway, okay.
Either way, the shvach has been taken out all the year, so it's just
right. So the actual
end of the year, maybe
the actual halacha is the actual. There's also different versions over here. The actual halacha is that we say whatever was accomplished up until the guy died is given to his yoshim, and that's it. At that point, you don't need to keep them on anymore. Whether it's 1 yosh, whether it's 5, whatever, you're not. It doesn't automatically get transferred. Another case. Who shasla to Amalahu? There was a shasla who said to the people who said to people. If I end up causing damage in the vineyard that I'm planting and taking care of, misalakna, then I agree that you can fire me. Acid, sure enough, he caused the loss. So now there had been shvach at that point. When he said nisalakna, implied I won't even take the shvach. You can fire me and you don't have to give me anything. Up until this point, there had been some shvach. Now though there was damage. So Amar Rav Yehuda misdalik b'lo shvach. Okay, so Rav Yehuda says you take him at his word. You fire him without giving him the shvach. Rav Kahana Amar misdalik b'lo shvach. So Rav Kahana says no, you can fire him, but you do have to give him the shvach that was accomplished up until this point. Rav Kahana says we understand his misdalikna means I won't argue against being fired, but the shvach is still shvach. Because in other words, because you could argue, I'm still entitled to the job. You can't fire me without cause.
I'm saying that if there was no shvach, then why is he being fired?
No, so that's the thing. There was some shvach, but now there's a hefzid. Up until now, there was some shvach. Now there's a hefzid. He's saying, if you want to fire me at that point, I won't dispute that. I won't take you to Beis Din demanding that I still need the job. However, so Rabbi Huda understood it, meaning he won't take the shvach either. But Kahana said, no, he's still saying I'm entitled to the shvach.
But I'm entitled to it.
Yeah. Murder of Kahana, the Omakas. However, if Kahana would agree, if he explicitly says that I agree that I will voluntarily resign or be fired or whatever without shvach, well then misdalik b'lo shvacha, sure. By explicitly saying b'lo shvacha, sure, then you have to hold him to his word. On the other hand, Rava Amar Rava says no, even in that case not. Asmachti, that's only an asmachta, because it's not a full fledged statement. It's not even unless they made a kinyan on it or something, because again, according to all the various possibilities of asmachta that we talked about before, it's something that he considers unlikely, and therefore he doesn't fully give himself over to it. It's something that doesn't fully depend on his action. It's something where the consequence is completely out of proportion to the cause, to the loss that he did.
I mean, it depends. There's witnesses or not, right?
No, it doesn't. No. Even if there's witnesses, no, unless you make a kinyan. If you have something which could be considered an asmachta, you either have to make a kinyan. You have to make a kinyan on it, basically, in order for it to not.
You just said that if you want to get the job, you said it.
Yeah, sort of. Asmachta like kinyan, so therefore it's not a valid kinyan. So therefore, yeah, you have to give him his. So therefore, you have to give him a shrach if you want to fire him. Yeah. Okay, the question is, according to Rava, why would it be any different than the case earlier in our perek, where the guy says, if I leave the field untended, uncultivated, and I don't work it, Ashalom b'meitva, I will pay out of the best of my property. What's the difference? The difference is Hussam, my da'afsid mashalim. Because there, you're only holding him to pay what he actually messed up. We estimate that this field would have produced $1,000 worth of crops. Fine, we make him pay $1,000.
There was no shvach.
In other words, there you're making him pay exactly what he was messed up. Hussam, my da'afsid minakin and lahir. What we should do is, yes, sure, we should deduct from the shvach the amount of damage that he caused. But the rest has to be given to him. For him to forego all of the shvach, because of a little bit, that would be considered an asmachta.
And all of shvach was not destroyed.
Exactly, that's the point.
And that's why it has to be considered.
Okay. Another case, Runya Shasla de Ravina. However, Runya was the Shasla of Ravina. We'll meet them also in the next, in Baba Basra, in the first parak, we'll meet them again in another case. I think we actually had Runya before also, yeah. Anyway, Atfid, he caused damage over there. This Runya seems to have been a little bit of a shlamazo. We had a case before in the eighth parak where he was a shomer and ended up having to pay. We're going to have a case over there where he gets all fenced in, whatever. He seems to have been a bit of a shlamazo.
No,
anyway, he was Ravina's shasla. Atfid, he caused damage. So, okay, so Ravina fired him. Also, the Kameh de Rava, so Runya came to a din Torah to Rava. Amalei, Chazi Ma'amai Kavadli. Rebbe, look what he did to me. Look what Ravina did to me. Amalei, so Rava tells him, Shapir Ovid. What's the point? He did what he's entitled to. Amalei, so Runya says, Holei Hisrabi. He didn't give me a warning ahead of time. Lechora, don't you have to give a warning to somebody before you fire him? Amalei, Lo Tzricha Lahamsri. So Rava tells him, no. You are one of those people who's considered forewarned l'hatchila. You don't need a warning. Rava l'taymei. Rava is going according to his svara. The Amar Rava, because Rava says as follows: Makri dargati, a melamed who teaches children. All of these things. We're going to be listing a bunch of people where if they cause some kind of damage or some kind of loss, it's irreversible. It can't be made good afterwards,
no
or at
point.
Least not. Therefore, if they cause any, if therefore if there's any problem, you can fire them without warning. Because they have to be on notice at all times that what they do is so important that no mistakes will be tolerated. And if any are, then yeah. So Makri Davdiki, a Malamed who teaches children.
Ahead of time?
When you first hire him, you inform him. Yeah. So makri dardiki, what would be, so Rashi explains that we're talking about if he taught the children with mistakes. We'll learn in Bava Basra, so we'll have a whole sugya about melamdim, about the dinim of melamdim, that if he teaches the children with mistakes, once they learn with a mistake, it's very hard to teach them the right way afterwards. Okay, different mafoshim talk about maybe there are different kinds of mistakes, but anyway, yeah. So that's a makri dardiki. There's other explanations among mafoshim also, including that maybe he doesn't look after them properly, so they waste time in class instead of learning, or he hits them too much, whatever. Anyway. Shafla, or shafla, like we're talking about over here, tabcha, a shoychet, umna, or an umna. Rashi over here says that umna means a moil. Earlier in the previous pedic, Rashi defined it over there rather as a bloodletter. Anyway, the sapper of a sofar masa, and the sapper or sofer of the city. There's a few different explanations with a few different explanations what that means. It can either mean the town sofer, Rashi and Tosfos discussed in Bava Basra, it can mean the town sofer who writes Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzahs. So you made a mistake. It turns out you've been learning from Apostle Sefer Torah with Apostle Tefillin the whole time. It's an irreversible thing. Or it can mean...
You paid him already.
Yeah, or it means a sofer... Or it means a sofer who writes shtaros. So again, he wrote a shtar with the wrong facts in it, then you have an irreversible damage. And then there's yet another explanation that sapper masa means a town barber.
That's
he gives somebody a bad haircut, then yeah. Okay.
Nah,
come on. Kulan kamustrin va'omdin dami. All that list of people are all considered pre-forewarned. They're all warned. They're all forewarned ahead of time. We need zero defect policy.
How can you fire a barber? I mean.
He's a town
haircut.
He's a town barber, so now he's not being paid by the city anymore. Now, if he wants to go into business for himself, these are people we're talking about who are municipal employees.
Like Russia,
yeah,
this is like Russia.
No pension, nothing. Goodbye.
Yeah. Klolad milsa. So the general rule is kol pseida delechader. Any time when you have an irreversible loss, kimusin roinin nami, then it's considered as if they're already pre-forewarned. So the same thing. Rava tells Runya, you are the shaslar on that list. You have to know. No mistakes will be tolerated, and if they are, then, yeah.
If that's the case,
then you're out.
Why are we sending this specifically to...
So that was the story. That was the case.
It has nothing to do with him, personally.
No, but not personally. No, it just happened that you're a shasla, yeah, so therefore you should know that just because he fired you, it's okay. Another case. Hahu shasla d'amalahu. A shasla once told his employers, Havali shvachoi, give me my shvach, I want to retire early. D'be'in l'meisek l'arad Yisrael, I want to move to Eretz Yisrael. Also, came to the Papa Bashmul, so they came for a din Torah to the Papa Bashmul. Amalahu havalei shvachi. So they see, he says, I'm sure, give him a shvach. Wait, amalei Rava. So Rava asked him, you ashvach arolei ashvach. What do you mean? Why should the whole shvach go to him? Is it only he who did the shvach? What about the land itself produced some of that shvach? Why is he entitled to all of it?
But
there's a difference also whether the shasla is leaving early, like in this case, or whether he's leaving at the end of the time. But here we're talking about he's leaving early.
What difference does it make? The land contributed for...
The point is, in other words, that usually up until this point, the balabas would get half and the pay of the payers, and this guy would do all the work. Now he's leaving early. Why are you saying that? Why are you saying that he should be entitled to all of the shvach?
All meaning all of the shvach.
In other words, if we started out at the beginning the land was worth 1,000. Now it's worth 1,200 with all the grapevines and everything growing over there. You're arguing you should give him the whole 200 of shvach. He's only supposed to get half of it.
But the first half, the boss gets second half. He gets.
Yeah.
That's
Lachora when he says shvach. Did he
say that the shvach would get only 50% of the shvach?
That's what he said, but that's what we're asking. That's why.
In this case,
in general, but that's why when a Papa Bashul says give him the shvach, it sounds like he's giving the entire shvach. So Rava is asking, you're not speaking accurately.
I was asking a new question, basically.
No, not a new question. But like, what do you mean? You're giving the shvach. Yeah. So Papa Bashul says, you're right. I didn't mean the whole shvach. I meant half.
Your regular.
However, still he asks, either Rava or the Balabas himself asks. The problem is that Ad Ha'idna have a shock of Balabas for Shaspa Paga. Fine, up until now, the deal was the Balabas will get half, the Shaspa will get half. The problem is, Hashta, now that it's in the middle of the season, Boila Mesa Monasa Larisa. Now the Balabas is going to have to hire an Oris to continue taking care of the thing.
He's going to have to pay
that Oris some percentage. He's going to end up losing out. If, let's say, up until now there were $200 worth of shvach, you're going to say you split it evenly 100-100, but now he has to hire somebody else to continue taking care of it from now on, and he's going to have to pay that person.
Yeah.
You don't hire a new shasla at this point because they're already planted. He's going to hire an aris. But the point is, he's going to have to pay out of pocket for that aris.
But the aris is only going to pay what he did in the future, not in the past.
No, but there's still some of the shvach includes the fact that now there are grapevines growing there where there weren't before. For example, doesn't include the peiros which come and go. We're talking about the actual vines themselves, which last from year to year.
Buys himself the seed.
So whatever it could be, I don't know. Anyway, Amalei, so in that case, Rav Papa Bar Shmuel says, okay, Riba de Shvach HaKamina. Fine, you're right. We have to say he means a quarter of the Shvach. So one,
half of half,
yeah. Now, what do we mean by half of half?
75% decrease
in
three lines.
Come on. Now, Sovar of Ashi Lameim. Now, Rav Ashi thought to say, when we say a quarter, now, there's two ways of looking at it. If you think of it like this. Let's say, Rashi gives the figures like this. Let's say the Shvach thus far has been six dinar. Now, a Shasla, we said, gets 50%. A regular artist gets 33%. So, let's say, for example, the guy is now, the Balavos is now going to have to hire an artist. That means,
how much?
An artist gets one-third, usually. So therefore, this artist is going to be getting two out of the six. So now, on the face of it, then, Rav Ashi thought to say, Riva Dahu Danka. When we say that the Shasla gets one quarter, we mean one quarter of what the Balabas himself is keeping. Meaning, one-sixth of the whole thing. Meaning, we take the six dinarim, we subtract from it two, which are going to have to be given to the artist in the future. And then we're left with four for the Balabas. Out of that four, he gives one to the Shasla. So the Shasla gets one, the Balabas gets three, which is full three, the original half that he should have received. And the other two are going to go to the new artist. That's what Rav Ashi thought to say.
That one coin can go all the way to Eretz Yisrael.
No. The Amr of Manyumi Breder of Nachumi, because we find that Rav Manyumi said in the name of Rav Nachumi, the Asra the Shokol Shasla Pauga Va'arisa Tilta, in a place where the arrangement is like this, like what we were just talking about, where Shasla usually gets half of the Shvach and an Oris gets only one third. High Shasla the Boyle is still okay. So now if a Shasla wants to quit early while the crops are still growing or whatever, Yahvin and Lay Shvach, home sakin and lay, so fine, we give him his shvach and we send him away.
But we do it
in such a way, we want to do it in a way where the Balabas is not going to have a hefted, where he's going to get his full original 50%. So therefore, Iyam Bishlema Rivo Duhu Dankas, if you say, like Rav Ashi is assuming that when we say we give the Shachla who's quitting to move to Eretz Yisrael, we give him one quarter of the Balabas's fortune, which is one sixth of the whole Shvach, Shaper, then it works out very nicely. The Balabas is getting his full three. He wants to give any of that 50% at three out of six. One will go to the Shasla, two will go to the new artist, and good. We're in good shape. Ella, Yamat, Riva, Mamish. But if you're going to say that's the point. That's the end of what Rav Ashi is saying. If you're going to say that when Rav Papa Bar Shmuel said, fine, you should get a quarter of the Shach, if it means literally a quarter, 1.5, one and a half dinarim, then say to the Balabais, Pagadanka. Wouldn't the Balabas end up losing half a dinar? Because he should have ended up with three. Because of the Shvach and like this, he's ending up with only two and a half. Two and a half for himself, two for the Shasla who's moving to Israel. One and a half for the Shasla who's moving to Israel, and two for the artist. And two for the artist. He's losing out. If we're saying, if Ramanumi Breder Nachumi is saying you can't make the Balabas lose out, that means it has to be that you're giving, it has to be you're giving the Shasla less, one rather than one and a half. However, Amalei Rav Acha Breder of Yosef or Rav Ashi, why, Rav Acha Breder of Yosef said to Rav Ashi, V'leimalei, why can't this Shasla answer, you know what, no, I am entitled to one and a half. Figure it rather as follows. Ant manosa dilo chavle la'arisa. You will take your portion and you'll give it to an artist who will get one third. V'ano manosa dili my deba'idna, deba'idna avidna be. As far as my portion, I will do whatever I want with it. Meaning it was like this. In other words, the Shasla should be able to argue like this. Look, you give me one and a half. My one and a half is out of the picture, let's say, which is one quarter. My one and a half is out of the picture. If you want to even buy it from me, then fine, you know, you'll get it for free, basically. The four and a half that you have, you'll give that to an artist to take care of. He will get 33% of it. 33% of 4.5 is 1.5. So therefore, you'll pay him 1.5 out of your 4.5. You're left with 3. And therefore, you have your 50% that you were supposed to originally. So why should you deduct from my portion and say that you're going to have to give 2 to the other artist when instead, you should, instead of looking at it as 2 out of 6, look at it as 1.5 out of 4.5 and set mine aside?
true.
Yeah.
Which way the Baal HaBayis gets
three. Either way, the Baal HaBayis will get three. Yeah.
So he's really fighting with the next Oris.
No, he's arguing with the Baal. He's arguing with the Baal HaBayis. What's going to happen with
so
my
right,
portion?
I mean, really,
who's losing?
Yeah. Nobody's losing. We're saying that the one way of looking at it is that you're looking at it. We're saying that the Baal HaBayis is going to be now responsible for the entire vineyard and is now going to have an artist where he's going to have to give him 33% of it, which is two, and therefore that two is going to come out of his four and a half, and therefore he's going to be left with two and a half. Look at it that the part that the artist is given is out of the picture. We're left with four and a half of shvach instead of six. That four and a half shvach, you hire an artist, and he gets one and a half out of that.
Basically, what we're saying is instead of calculating the third from the whole amount, we calculate
it from what's remaining after we give the shvach for his portion.
It makes a big difference, and it's fairer this way.
Omar, so Rav Ashi answers, Ki motis v'shchitas kodshim tov actually. When you get to Masechta Zvachim, Shchitas Kodshim, which is the Masechta about Shechtin Kodshim, meaning Zvachim, then come and ask me. Now, what does that mean? Rashi says he meant it as a compliment. I see you know how to come up with very good, sharp questions. I want you to, when we get to Masechta Zvachim, which is a very deep, complex Masechta, come ask, and you're welcome to come and ask me questions. That's how Rashi explains it. Rashi then brings that yesh omrim that no, he didn't mean it as a compliment. He meant it sort of like to push him off, like it isn't a good question. So Rashi says, based on the lashon of the Gemara over here, it seems first of all, it is a good question, and second of all, we started by saying sova Rav Ashi l'meimer. Rav Ashi thought to say that you give the shach for only one.
Yeah.
It sounds like at the end he changed his mind based on Rav Acha's question. So in that case, it has to mean that he meant it as a compliment. Most other Rishonim, Tosfos doesn't specifically talk about it, but most other Rishonim understand that no, like the explanation that Rashi rejects. It really does mean that he's saying it's not really that much of a question. You're the kind of guy who, fine, when it comes to Masechta Zvachim, you'll have appropriate questions over there. Or, actually, the Ramban says a little bit differently. What he means is, when you get to Masechta, you haven't even gone through all of Shas yet. When you get to Masechta Zvachim, when you're closer to finishing all of Shas, and you have a better idea how the Gemara works, how the Derech HaGemara works, then come and see if you even still have the question, because you'll have already realized by that point that it's not such a good question. Now, why not? Why not? So the Ramban discusses, because, for example, the Baal HaBayis has the ability to say, what do you mean set your part aside? Your part is insurance for my part. Let's say, for example, my part gets damaged. I'll be able to take my portion out of that part of the field instead.
Yeah.
So what do you mean we're going to set aside one third of it and say as if we're not cultivating it because it still belongs to you or whatever? We're not going to do that. So therefore, according to that, the Rav Ashi is telling him it's not really such a good question after all. And when you get to learning Zvachim, you'll realize why it works.
How can you put the shatter's payment aside? I mean,
well, that's what he means. In other words, the Shasla is saying basically that I have a certain part ownership in the thing now because I'm entitled to my shvach, but
right.
You're not going to pay me cash on the barrel head right now. You'll owe it to me later. You'll send it to me.
Why?
You'll send it to me in Eretz Yisrael because he doesn't have necessarily money right now. Right now, the shvach is still in the vineyard.
Right.
In the vineyard, so therefore you'll make me basically a part owner for now. My part doesn't have to be, I'm not going to worry about the cultivation of it. Maybe I'll hire an artist at my expense, maybe not, whatever, but you don't have to worry about it. What we're saying, the Ramban says that Rav Ashi is effectively answering, I still do have concern about it because your part is still insurance for my part. But he's saying when he says hovoli shvachoy, it doesn't necessarily mean give me cash on the barrel head right now. It can mean that I'm owed a certain amount of shvach. We'll say that for the time being, until the grape season is over, I'll be a partial owner over here.
So that seems to say
that's
subject to change in conditions. That's
not
no.
What do you mean subject to change in conditions? You owe me right now one third of the shvach. You owe me one third of the shvach.
Right, and the Baal HaBayis cannot say.
So therefore, we'll consider it. Right now you'll owe me it as part of the field, and eventually at the end of the season we'll make other arrangements.
Regardless of what happens.
Yeah. Okay. Onward. Okay, Gufa. Getting back to what we said, Omer of Manuri Bredin.
That's the end of it?
So how we explain what Rav Ashi's eventual conclusion was, again, according to Rashi, it would mean that he eventually accepted Rav Acha's argument, that the Shasla really is entitled to one and a half rather than one. According to everybody else, it means that no, he sort of said, never mind that. He's only entitled to one.
He's still on his position.
Yes, and that's the accepted Allah.
And that's because what?
Because, like we said, you can't say the artist doesn't have the ability to say that the part that I own we're going to set aside, you're going to ignore that as far as hiring an artist. No, that's still part of my vineyard and still needs to be cultivated in case part of my vineyard gets damaged. I'm going to use the grapes from that one, for example. Yeah.
There's no penalty for this guy for breaking the contract in the middle of the year.
No, because we learned. No, because unless what he did is going to cause a hefted. So if he's going to cause a hefted, so that we're trying to make it, yeah, that it won't cause a hefted to the ball of us. But otherwise, play your halakha by after the bus. Yeah, yeah. The worker can quit anytime he wants. Okay. Good. Getting back to what we said, Amar of Manrumi.
No, we cannot.
The halacha is that the shasla in this case is only entitled to one out of the six.
That's very unfair.
He left early. If he had waited till the end of the season, he might have gotten more. Whatever. Okay. But the point is, we have to safeguard the balabas. Shouldn't end up losing it. If it's the kind of place where Shasla usually gets half of the produce, Varisa Tilsa, and an artist who hadn't actually planted the vines would only get one third, then Hai Shasla Deboy is Saluki. So now if a Shasla wants to quit, Yahvin and Leishvachi, we give him the Shvach, and then we send him away. We do it in a way that Balabas shouldn't lose out. Fine, that was the same statement as before. We're not really adding anything to that, but we're bringing it as an introduction to the next thing that he's going to say.
It's not fair that only the Barbos shouldn't lose that. Nobody.
The Shasla is losing early, is leaving early. Therefore,
no,
that's the problem.
That.
That's the point. That's the point. The Barbos shouldn't have to suffer a loss. The Shasla, if he's leaving early, he'll have to be the one. He'll have to suffer the loss. Yeah. Okay. Another case, I'm going to manure me braider of Nehomi. Kupa Sava, if you have a vine that became old, and therefore it's not producing fruit anymore. Pauga, then it's considered like any other peiros. The shasla gets half the value of it because it's normal that vines after a while age and are no longer producing fruit. So when the shasla planted this vineyard and it's taken care of it over the years, we know that eventually some of the vines are going to grow old and be useful only for wood or whatever. Therefore, that was included in the deal. However, shot for Nahara, if the vineyard was flooded by a river and now all the crop was damaged and now you just have the wood to divide up, then that's the equivalent of the Shasla leaving early. And then in that case, Riva, he's only entitled to one quarter.
Of the Shvach.
Of the Shvach, right. For the same logic as before. Another case. Hahu Gabra the Mashkin Powder to Lachabri La Esashnin, a person one time gave a paudis, meaning a vineyard, as a mashkin to somebody for 10 years. So Rashi says it could have been either of the types of mashkin that we learned back in Ezor Neshech. It could have, in other words, he had borrowed money from him. So it could have been the type that we learned over there called Nachyaisa, where we're saying that every year we'll figure out this vineyard produces an average of, let's say, $100 worth of crops every year. So therefore, every year we will deduct 100 from the loan, but some years it may be more, some years it may be less, but that's the amount. That's Nachyaisa. Or it could have been Mashkanta de Sura, where we say that we'll say at the end of 10 years or whatever it is, the loan is going to be paid off regardless of how much crops there were. So it could have been either of those kinds.
Either we adjust year on year.
So either we adjust it year by year, or we say a fixed amount, and at the end of that time, the loan is paid off. Right. Now,
maybe it makes less.
What?
Either it makes less.
Right. We learned over there that Mashkanta de Sura, there's no problem with it, of Ribis, and even Nachyaisa is allowed in certain cases. Yeah. Okay. So he made this Mashkin for 10 years. The Kash L'Chomesh Shnin. 5 years later, already the vines were old and aren't going to be producing fruit anymore. And Rashi, instead of 10, and Rashi points out, Bizmane, Shoyeroy Lakach, the vines were already old at that point. We knew to begin with that 5 years later they're going to be no good. So what happens? Abaya Amar Peira Havi. Abaya says that the wood of those old vines is now considered like Peiros, therefore the Malver is entitled to them, just like any other Peiros. Rava Amar Karna Havi. Rava says that no, it's considered like the Keren, it's considered like the actual original value. Therefore, what we should do is we should use the money from the sale of that wood to buy new karka. And the malva will continue eating the peiros of that because they're considered keren. Because otherwise, I don't know, whatever. But whatever amount you get. Because the point there's a big difference. But the point is, the way to look at it as peiros is because you knew they were going to get old, and therefore that's all they're worth is firewood. The other way of looking at it is it's a keren, because once the vines are chopped down, you have no more peiros.
By the way,
you plant new ones, but that's
not
the difference.
Yeah, if you had no repair, it doesn't mean they...
Fine, but then in that case, then by default, kind of it becomes a carrot. Wait. Okay, so actually, so Tosfos points out, what about what Rabbi Numi was saying before about Kulpa Sata?
He left money on the vine.
Yeah.
In other words, my whole collateral is just the vine.
Yeah.
Should have done the land.
And actually, that's the thing. So that's the thing. Tosfos makes the distinction before, when a few lines before, when Rabbi Numi said Kulpa Sata, that if you have a vine that becomes old, then the artist, and then it's considered Peiros, and the artist and the Balabas split it equally, the difference is, there is a certain ownership in the goof of the karka. The shasla has it because he arranged to begin with, he's planting vines and he's taking care of them, he has a certain part ownership in the karka to that extent. Whereas the malva over here only has the ownership of the tater. Therefore, it's different. Therefore, you can talk about that. Maybe it's Karen. Mace, so I have a contradiction. Breitzer says, talking about a mashkanta, if you have, for example, so you had made a mashkanta on a tree and it dried up or it was chopped down, we said both of them are also to take the fruit of it because you're going to have a problem of ribis with the peiros. If the malva takes them and if the malva takes them, you're going to have a problem of ribis.
Okay.
So we learned over there that what was the situation we had over there? You did a mashkanta on a tree, we said over there we were talking about over there that let's say for example we started by saying that it may be talking about when yovel applies. We ended up saying that not, but we said over there that neither of them can chop down the wood, not because of ribis. Sorry, no, the problem is because either one, kal yakarna, you're taking away the karen of the other person. The whole deal was that you're going to be entitled to the peiros for a certain number of years. You're not entitled to the karen. On the other hand, I'm not entitled to take away the karen and thereby ruin your peiros. So therefore, neither of them is allowed to take away the karen. Kate said, yeah, so what should we do? You mock relates, and we should sell this firewood. We lock off ben karka boy for peiros. And then we use that to buy new karka, and we eat peiros from it. And then the malva continues eating peiros from it. Now, my love, yovishdumi, is a nixas. Lachora, we mentioned two cases where it dried up or where it was chopped down. We would assume that dried up means similar to being chopped down. In the sense, man nixas vizmanay, yovish vizmanay. Lachora, when do you chop down a tree? You usually don't have a fruit-producing tree. You only chop it down when it stops producing fruit. You're not even allowed to chop it down once it's still producing fruit, unless in extenuating circumstances. It's part of the issue of Baal Pashkes, but yeah, we learned about it in Baba Kama that you're not supposed to. But so if it stopped producing fruit, you're allowed to. But that's normally when you chop it down. Af Yavish Bismane. Lachora then Yavish also means where it became it's known that it'll be fresh for a certain number of years and then it's expected to dry up. And we're saying that we consider it Keren. You have to use it to buy new Keren from which there will be Peiros. Alma Kaunahavi, which goes to show that it's like Karen. So that agrees with Rava. What would Abaya do with that?
But it becomes Yavish much after it stops producing fruits.
That's not the point. The point is, you know, this type of tree, the point is that Nixas means something where you know that it's going to be producing fruit for X number of years, and then it stops, and at that point is when you chop it down.
Right.
Or you know that it's like this kind of tree grows for X number of years, and then it dries up.
Right.
Why
can you just plant new stuff from there?
If you can plant, because we're talking about there was only the tree itself. The tree itself was the mashkanta.
Oh.
So therefore, we need new keren for there to be peiros.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. The answer is loy. Nixas dumia de yavish. On the contrary, you could answer that Abaya would explain it the other way around. That nixas is meant to, that with, by putting them together, we mean it was chopped down in a way similar to yavish. My yavish v'loizman, right? Where the word yavish could just as well mean that it happened before the expected time, not that it became old, but that it dried up prematurely. Af nixas was v'loizman. The same thing nixas could be that it was cut down prematurely. And in that case, sure. In that case, that's not considered peiros, because the whole point is whether we consider it karka or peiros is this something that was expected, the chapila. It wasn't expected. Therefore, of course, it would be karen, sure.
Toshma.
Rava wouldn't have a problem with that either, but Abaya. Toshma, come, let's try to prove from another case. that we learned in Ksuvos. We learned over there about the whole concept of nichsim belug, that a woman has property then that came into her possession after she got married. She holds on to the keren, and the husband is entitled to the payer. Even before, it can be either nichsim belug or nichsim tzayin baris, or anything that she gets after she's married automatically becomes nichsim belug.
If she comes in with it,
it can be one or the other. But if she gets it after she gets married, it's automatically nichsim belug. So
meaning he gets the payer.
So, nafla gfanim v'zeisim skenim. What happens if she inherits old vines or old olive trees, so they're not producing food anymore
during
her marriage? So, what do? The husband is supposed to get payrus, and there are no payrus. Yimachar leitzim. We sell those trees or vines for firewood. V'yilachach ben karka v'oechel payrus, and we use that to buy karka from which he will get payrus. So again, you're asking why you don't just replant in that karka, because all she owned was the trees themselves, so she doesn't have any rights on the karka. She had bought the trees that were on somebody else's property. Now that the tree is gone, there's no ownership left on the property. So if you want there to be keren, for there to be payrus, it has to be new property.
So they sell the trees.
They use that to buy new karka, and then the husband will continue having payrus from that. So again, l'chora now we're talking about kenim means that they're old, they stop producing fruit, and we consider them keren, like rava, not like abaya. The answer is ema vizkinu. No, because you can answer that the mission over there didn't mean kenim that they became old at the expected time, but vizkinu, they became old prematurely. Again, it's unexpected. The ibarisema, or another way you could answer it.
Who says vizkinu means early?
Vizkinu can mean either one, but it can mean vizkinim would usually mean they became, before their time. Also, another explanation is, didn't we explain in that sugya in Ksuvos that actually the case was over there that the trees belong to her, like we just said, in karka that doesn't belong to her lachachila? Where in that case, even if you don't say, whether you're talking about that they aged prematurely or not, either way, once the trees are chopped down, there is no more keren. Mela, in other words, if the ground actually belongs to her as well, fine. Then you actually still have some keren, because you do have land over there on which you can plant new trees or vines or what have you. Therefore, you can argue whether this dead wood is considered keren or payrus. But here, where the land itself doesn't even belong to her, for sure the trees themselves have to be considered payrus of necessity. Otherwise, there's nothing left. So therefore, of necessity, we have to go sell it and use it to buy other stuff.
Buy other land
with other trees, whatever.
And that's the halacha?
Yeah, the halacha, this is one of the cases, even though this isn't one of the official six cases, this is where the halacha is like a baya. The halacha is like a baya, actually, in this case, because it's not one of the official six of Yaakov, but we see that the Mishnayos and the Braitas fit better according to him. The Gemara took the trouble to shtel the mine according to him, so therefore that shows that loss. Okay, some more miscellaneous cases. Hahu started to have a kasuv shnin stava. There was a shtar of a mashkanta. Rashi explains it was a mashkanta de sura. Again, it said that when this time is up, then the loan is considered paid off after the malva has been eating the payrus all these years.
Shtanar
Stama, it just said a number of years. It didn't say how many. It didn't say a number. It said this mashkanta de sura is for years, without specifying a number of years. What happened? Malva omasholish loiva omashtayim. The malva claims it was for 3 years. The loiva claims it was only for 2 years. So now what happens if the malva went and ate the payrus of the third year before the case came to Beis Din, mi nemon, who would be believed? If it had happened before he did, for sure we would say the loiva has the chazaka, he owns the karka, and there's no payrus yet. But now that the malva already ate the payrus,
what do we do?
Rabbi Yehuda on the karka of a chazaka b'al ha'akaima. Rabbi Yehuda said, even then we still say the karka is in the chazaka of the original owner, therefore we believe the loiva. Rav Kahana payrus b'cheska sechleim. Rav Kahana says that no, the malva has a chazaka. He's the one who took the payrus already.
If you have a mashkin, he owns it for that time also.
Yeah, well, we don't know how long that time is. That's the point. The Hilchta Kavah says that Rav Kahana drama payrus b'cheska sechleim kaimi, and the halacha is in fact like Rav Kahana. He is the one. He's the muchzik. If the loiva wants to claim otherwise, he's the one who would have to bring the raya.
So the malva can't eat it.
So the malva has already eaten the payrus, and he's not obligated to reimburse him. Okay, the question is, because he has the chazaka, because he already ate them.
Gone.
So they're already gone. So therefore, if you want to say that I wasn't entitled to it, you have to prove it.
Why'd you go and let him eat them?
That's the point, right? Okay,
well, I mean,
yeah. The question is, v'hakaymel on the hilchsa kavaseder of Nachman, but don't we know for a fact that the halacha is like Rav Nachman, which he said in the previous perek when we had the case over there of the bathhouse that was rented for 12 dinner per year, one dinner per month. We said that if there was a suffix, who gets the 13th month? We said Rav Kahana, because it was an Ibriya. Rav Nachman had said over there that the karka is b'cheskas ba'ala'ah. We always go according to the chazaka of the owner of it. Therefore, he's entitled to the rent unless it can be proved otherwise. So that so in karka b'cheskas ba'ala'ah medes, so here it should be the same kind of thing. No, that's we said over there that Shmuel, that Ravin said yechloiku. Yeah, but Rav Nachman had said karka b'cheskas ba'ala'ah medes. So why don't we say that over here and say that the loiva is entitled to get reimbursed for the payers? The difference is hasam milsa delay avidulei gluy, because the difference is over there. You have a suffix that's never going to get clarified because he mentioned both things. He mentioned one dinner per month and 12 dinner per year. There's no way of reconciling them. So you don't know. It's a question whether you go according to Lashon Rishon or Lashon Achron, as we learned over there. Hacha, Milsa David Lui. He heard something which eventually is going to be figured out. Eventually, the Edim who signed the Shtar are going to be able to come and testify whether it was 2 or 3 years.
Oh.
Okay. So we don't want to be Matzriach based in twice. What are we going to do? We're going to take the Malva to Beis Din and make him reimburse all those payers. Later on, the Edom are going to come and say, actually, it was pack of 3 years, like the Malva says, and then we're going to make him, and then we're going to have to go back to Beis Din. We're not going to be Matriarch Beis Din to do that, something which we'll just wait till the Edom show up, and then we'll clarify the situation. Meanwhile, he already ate the payers.
He ate the payers.
Well, now if the Edom come, they'll have to give them back.
But
we'll bother the Beis Din once.
Bother the Beis Din twice, exactly. Now, if in fact the Edom are not going to be available anymore, let's say we know they died or whatever, then we talk a go like Rav Nachman. Then if the Malva wants to keep the value of those payers and not have to reimburse them, he'll be the one who has to bring the raya.
After how many years?
However many years. Another case.
The
Balabas, the loiva is the one who's going to have to, he's going to be the one who's entitled to the reimbursement. And if the Malva, the one who owns the Mashkanta now, wants to claim otherwise, he's going to have to bring a proof. Okay. Another case. Malva o mechomish, loiva o mechomish. What happens now, another case, the Malva claims that the Mashkan was for 5 years. Loiva o mechomish, and the loiva says it was for 3 years. Now, 3 years have already passed, so the loiva is claiming the Mashkanta is up. The Malva claims I still have 2 years to go, and the situation is here, there's no shtar. We don't have the shtar available right now. So, what happens? So, the loiva says to the Malva, you want to claim you have 2 years to go, bring the shtar. And the Malva says, I lost the shtar. Amar Rav Yehuda, Malva Neman. So Rav Yehuda says in a case like that, the Malva would be believed. Migoy di boy amal kocha yibiyadi, because he has a migoy. He could have said, I bought it, because I already have Shnei Chazaka. As we'll learn in Bava Basra, in Cheskas Abatim, the whole reason why, one of the reasons why a Chazaka is for 3 years, is because we don't expect a person to hold on to their shtar for more than 3 years. So he would have a valid claim. If he were to come to Beis Din and say, I actually bought this, not just the Mashkanta, but it's after 3 years, and therefore you can't expect me to hold on to my shtar indefinitely, we would believe him. So he has a migoy over here.
That's right.
Yeah. Amalei Rav Papa, Rav Ashi, so Rav Papa says to Rav Ashi, okay, that's what Rav Yehuda said, but you should know, Rav Zvid and Rav Avira lo svir lo hodu Rav Yehuda. You should know that Rav Zvid and Rav Avira do not agree with what Rav Yehuda said. My time, that we have a migoy. Why? My time, a high shtar kivnu l'guvayna koi, because the shtar is needed in order to collect the debt. Therefore, Mizhar Zahirbe, therefore we can expect the Malva is going to be very careful with it. In this case, the fact that he's claiming he doesn't have it must be Umich Bashuda Kavshi L'Shtore. It must be that he's hiding the shtar. We say he must be hiding the shtar. Sava Orch L'Tartin Shneini Sefer, because he figures I can get away with eating, having it for two more years. In other words, the difference is, Rashi says, a shtar of a sale is meant to be proof that you sold it. You can't expect them to keep the guy forever. They keep it forever. So we assume after 3 years it may get lost and he's not worried about it. There's not going to be any error after 3 years. Nobody's going to object that he doesn't own it. But now, in a case like this, it is a shtar mashkanta. He agrees that there was a mashkanta.
So a shtar mashkanta is more than 3 years?
A shtar mashkanta is meant to be that you're proving with it how many years you're entitled to eat the pears. You're supposed to be careful with it. If he says, I lost it, we can't believe him. It's almost like, Mefarshim say, it's almost like a migur b'machim agent. We are aiders that a person is going to be careful with a shtar mashkanta.
But
because,
how long? I mean,
however long the mashkanta is.
How long are you going to keep your $100
out? Yes. Yeah. It's exactly that.
Money code.
So therefore,
how are you gonna keep? How long are you keep your bear bond?
So therefore, you can't believe him that he says I lost it. We have to assume that he's lying. Well, by that logic, now Rashi says the question is actually going back on Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, who's saying that we give him a migui. In that case, hi mashkanta desura. In that case, let's look at the case of mashkanta desura again. They write as follows in the shtat. The mishlim shnaya ilay, and at the end of these years, tipuk ara double excessive. This land will go out and return to the original owners, the loiva, without him having to pay any further money. The debt will be considered paid off on the basis of the payers that have been eaten all these years. Now, suppose, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the guy were to hide the shtar mashkanta, and again, it's 10 years, let's say, he'll claim that I bought it and I lost the shtar. Are you going to say also that he's believed? Would the Rabbanan make a takana that could cause the loiva to suffer an unjust loss? In other words, Mela, Mephoshim would explain like this. Mela, regular mashkanta, benachyaisa, or whatever, we talked about over there, the pros and cons, when it is mutter, when it isn't. But it's something that's an ad hoc thing that people came up with. The Chachamim found a way to make it mutter. Mashkanta de Sura is something where the Chachamim, to begin with, made the takana in a way to avoid problems of riddim. The Chacham are not going to make the takana in such a way that the loiva could end up losing. Nachyaisa is, we said over there, that you're deducting a fixed amount per year, regardless of the amount of payers. Nachyaisa, we said over there, rather, is you're not. You're deducting the actual amount of the payers per year. Whereas
so
mashkanta,
if I lend you $100, and I'm eating $9 and then $11.
Yes, so we deduct on a year by year basis, right?
Until it's all over.
Yes.
And
as opposed to a mashkanta desura, we do a fixed amount per year.
It's just whatever it's going to be, 10 years of eating fruit for $100.
Yes.
Not for $100.
No, 10 years, $10. $10. Yeah.
Doesn't have to be in the amount of $100.
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, okay. We're saying at the end of 10 years, it's considered paid off.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that one has a problem with rivets, doesn't it?
No, mashkanta desura is not. Mashkanta desura is the one that doesn't have a problem with rivets. Nachyaisa may or may not have a problem, depending on how you structure the deal. Are you saying you're going based on the actual amount, or are you going based on a fixed amount, but there's still going to be some part of the loan left at the end, and therefore you can have problems with rivets? That's the difference. Mashkanta desura is the loan is considered completely paid off. But nachyaisa, there still may be some amount left at the end.
But what if I eat more than $100?
Doesn't matter.
And why is that not ribbit?
So we said over there, because there's always the chance that there's always a chance. The whole produce may be less, and it may be completely gone. There may be not. Okay. So a mashkanta desura is something that was created by the Chachamim.
For
ribbit purposes. But they wouldn't do it in a way that would make problems for the loiva.
Well, I mean, still, the loiva can lose.
Yeah, but what we're saying, in other words, so how can Rabbi Yehuda be saying? But how can Rabbi Yehuda be saying that you've created a possibility, you've created an incentive for the loiva to now hide the shtar after 3 years, claim that I'm still entitled to many years more, and you will allow it on the basis of Rabbi Yehuda's migui? How can we do that? Amalei, so he answers, Hosan takinu l'rabbanan, because in the case of mashkanta desura, the rabbanan made a further takana in that detail, in that connection, the mori ara yoiv kaska, the kori karya, that we still put it the responsibility on the owner of the field, the loiva, that he is the one who's still responsible to pay the property taxes on it. And also, he's the one, the kori karya, he's also the one who is responsible for digging the ditch around the edge of the field, to mark off where the field ends. So therefore, that shows that he's still the owner. That shows he's still the owner. Therefore, that prevents the malva from hiding the shtar and claiming that. The point is that therefore the malva doesn't have this migui anymore. He doesn't have this migui to hide the shtar and claim that I bought it and I lost the shtar. If you bought it, why is this other guy paying the taxes on it? Why is he making it? Okay, so he asks him, out of the Leslakaya Valoyev Taska, Valoyev Taskamai, fine, what about a piece of land where there's no ditches to be dug and there's no tax to be paid? It's a tax-free area.
Yeah.
Mai, then what's the din? Omalei, sort of Ashi answers, Ibarilil Machoye. In that case, then there's another way around it. The loiva can go and make an official machal. Before the 3 years are up, let him go make an official machal and based it. This guy may claim that this land is his because he lost the shtar. I'm informing you that not. As we'll learn in Baba Basra and Chazkas Abatim, once a machal is made on that puts the guy on notice, you better keep your shtar. You can't get away with claiming that it's lost. Therefore, yeah. Okay, loyim chamai, fine. Rabin asks, what if he doesn't make a machah? The answer is, he who daft and an afshis. Fine, that's his problem.
Right.
Yeah, so but the mashkantika surah itself is not responsible for that. We can still hold. Now, whether the halacha is actually like Rabbi Yehuda or not, that's a different. That's machlokas Rishonim. Most Rishonim do pass in like Rabbi Yehuda because, fine, we found a way to make it work according to him. There are some Rishonim who say the halacha should be like Rav Zvid. Okay. Next. Another case. Oris Oimel Mechti Yerad. See, what happened?
They didn't have the places to register the Shtarim over there.
Yeah. Okay. Suppose you have a case, the artist claims that I went and started working on this field on the understanding that I'm going to collect half the payment. The Balabas says that no, it was only one third. Me Neman, which one is belief? Rav Yehuda, I'm a Balabas Neman. Rav Yehuda says we believe the Balabas, so he only has to give one third. Rav Nachman, I'm a Kolk Minig, I'm a Niner. Rav Nachman says you go according to what the local Minig is, whatever usually the artist in this area gets. So we thought to say loy pleidi that maybe Rav Nachman and Rav Yehuda are not actually arguing because hod ba'asur the shokel arisa pauga hod ba'asur the shokel arisa tilsa, because maybe they're just talking about two different places, one where the artist normally gets a half and therefore minigam dinez get the half, and the other is that minigam dinez get the third. Amaluru Rav Mori, brother of Shmuel, however Rav Mori, the grandson of Shmuel, told them no, hachi amar Abaya, that you should know Abaya said. That Abaya said no. Afila ba'asur the shokel arisa pauga pleidi. No. They argue even in a place where the artist normally gets a hand. Why? Because Rabbi Huda and Balabayas Neman. Why does Rabbi Huda say that we believe the Balabas, even though the Huda, everybody else usually gets half? Because again, he has a migus. He could claim that the guy is not an artist at all. He's just somebody that I hired on a temporary basis. I hired him for a few days or a few months or whatever, and I'm paying him in cash. So therefore, he has a migui. Now, Rashi says he'll still have to swear a Shvuas Hesed.
Right.
But he won't have to, he still has to swear Shvuas Hesed, but he won't, because on the basis of that migui, he's not going to have to pay the half. And, by the way, we won't consider him a modi b'mitzvah either, because it's tanech chitim b'hoi b'loi b'sori. The oris is claiming that you owe me X amount of the, X percent of the produce, and he's saying, no, I only owe you X amount of dollars.
They were.
It's two different things.
Something
else to
prove that he paid
at this hour. That's why he needed a Shvuas Hesed to say that. But yeah,
he doesn't have to bring his receipts.
Yeah. Okay. Another. Well, actually, tomorrow, Bez Hashem, we'll start learning about the dinim of paying workers on time and the various dinim that are involved with that. Yeah. Okay. Another case. Yisaimim onrim onurish bachnu. What happens? You have a case like this. We know a balabas is able to collect from karka, from nechasim mishubatim. He's also able to collect from karka after the loiva died and his yisoyim was taking it over the karka. The Baal Choyv was able to collect from yisoyim. We know that. That's a given. He's not. Now, what happens, though, is, now, he's not entitled to collect from the shvach, from the improvements that the yisoyim made in the karka, which brings us back to the concept of shvach that we were talking about before. So, yisoyim on a shvach. Now, suppose the yisoyim claim that we gave shvach, we added value to this property. You're not entitled to collect from that part of it. The Baal Choyv says your father was the one who made those improvements, and therefore it's part of the karka, and I'm entitled to collect from that.
Can we have a case like that, but not on shvach? Where the Yisraelim claim it's their part, and...
We had cases like that with Metalfa, and here we're talking about karka. Yeah. Okay. Almila Habiraya, who is responsible for bringing the proof? Who's the Olav Haraya? So Rav Chanina thought to say, well, the land is in the chazaka of the Yisraelim. Therefore, it would be the Balabas who has to bring the Raya. However, an old Tamar Chacham tells them, Tosus brings elsewhere, that maybe Ahu Sava means Eliyo Anavi. Okay, anyway, he tells them, Hachi Amar Rav Yechanan, that Rav Yechanan, you should know, Rav Yechanan said as follows, no, Al Yisraelim Bahavi Raya. In this case, it's the Yisraelim who are obligated to bring the proof. My time,
even though
they're the ones who are muchzik in the karka. Why? My time. Ara kiven to the guvaina time, because since land is meant to be collected, because it's available, it's under shibud to the choyv, unlike metalfalin, commander gavya damya, it's considered as if it was already collected. It's already considered as if it was in the reshus of the malva. Vali yisayim lahavi raya, and therefore the yisayim are going to be the ones who have to bring the raya. Tosfos discusses in the first perek that the machlokas with Tosfos and other mafarshim on this, but Tosfos learned that this whole sugya, in the end of the Ar Sugya, we're going to say specifically that we're talking about a case where the field was originally designated as an apostiki, where it was designated as this is going to be the one you collect from. We'll see at the end of the sugya. Tosfos explains that even at this point in the sugya, we know that it's an aposiki. Still, though, they thought to say that it may be an aposiki, but still the Yesomim have the chazak on it. But no, we're saying that in this case, that no, because it's meant for collection. It's designated as an aposiki.
You pay collection
for the chayim. Their father had borrowed $100. He had said at the time, technically the shibud could be on any of my karka. However, I'm going to designate this one particular piece of karka, which is worth $100. You will be entitled to collect from it when the time comes.
So when it's designated as an aposiki, the proof.
Because it's considered as if it's already in the possession of the Balaba. Again, other Mefarshim learn differently. Other Rishonim learn that we may be talking about at this point in the Sogia that it's not even it's an Akrasiki. Here we're thinking about it's not. Right.
Right. Okay. But if we think it is, then the Yesemim has to.
The Yesemim are the one who has to bring the Daya, but the Shrach. Yeah. So Abaya says, as a matter of fact, we can prove this based on a Mishnah in Bava Basra. We have a case like this. The Mishnah describes over there, you're not supposed to have trees planted within a certain distance of the city. 25 amos, 50 amos, we'll learn the details over there in the second paragraph of Bava Basra in a few minutes. Within a certain distance of the city, 25 or 50 amos as the case may be. What happens? So, let's say, for example, the city was built and populated first. Later on, somebody comes and plants a tree in that zone. He has to chop it down, and the city doesn't have to reimburse him for it. What happens the other way around? He had his tree growing there for many years. The city gradually grew, or was built, or whatever, and now it's within 25 or 50 amos of his tree. We still make him chop down the tree. However, the city has to pay him for it.
Of course, the tree is before the city came.
What happens if you have a suffix? Well, you're not sure which one came first. Yeah. The din is suffix, zekadim, a suffix, zekadim. So if you have a suffix, which one came first, the city or the tree? Koitzetvein and oisindomin. He has to chop it down, and they don't have to reimburse him. Alma, which the proof is, kiven dele makas kaima, since the tree is anyway going to have to be chopped down, amrinimle, so we tell him, I see raya ushkel. You're going to be the one who has to chop down the tree regardless. You want to claim that you're entitled to money, you're the one who's going to have to bring the raya. In other words, you're the moitzi mechaveira, basically, because the tree is going to be chopped down either way. If he can find any, sure. Hochanami, same logic over here. High shtar, kiven dele gavina kaima. Since the shtar is something that is eventually going to be collected on, commander gadya damya, it's considered as if it was already collected. Vala yisaimim lahaviraya, and therefore the yisaimim are going to be the ones. Either way, in other words, this karka is going to the baal chay. The only question is about the shach. Therefore, yes, they're going to be the ones who have to bring the raya. The same way as with the tree. Either way, the tree is a goner, and the only question is whether it's being paid for or not. Same logic.
You compare shtar to karka.
He has a shtar. He has to have a shtar, otherwise he can't be collecting from karka anyway. From
right.
Milval Pei, you don't collect from a shtar.
Right.
You don't collect from karka.
Right.
So he has a shtar. The shtar is destined to be collected because that's a milv of a shtar. It's going to be collected one way or the other,
right.
Either from money or from karka. So therefore, the only argument is what do we do about the shvach? The assignment are going to be the ones who have to bring the proof that the shvach belongs to them. Okay. Now let's go further. I see Yisemim Raya Deinu Ashbahu. Now let's say, fine, the case continues. The Yisemim did bring proof that they created the Shvach. Fine, so now obviously the Shvach belongs to them. What happens though? This Baal Chayv is going to be taking the Karka. There's two different ways we can look at it. Let's say, for example, so the Chayv was for 100. The original Karka was worth 100. With their Shvach, it's now worth 120. There's two different ways we can look at it. We can say that the Baal Chayv is going to take the entire Karka and reimburse them $20. Or you can say he'll take 5/6 of the karka and leave them 1/6, $20 worth of karka. Which is it? Sovereign of Chanina Lamemer, so Chanina thought to say, so Chanina thought to say that we pay them off with land, that we leave them a percentage of the land equal to the amount of their shach. But that's not correct. He can remove them with money. In other words, he reimburses them and he takes the whole field. He takes the whole field and reimburses them at cash, right? Midir of Nachman. This is based on what Rav Nachman said. The Amr of Nachman, Amr Shmuel, Shloisha Shaman Lahem and Shvach. There's three cases where we evaluate the value of the Shvach, or Malan Oisim Bedomim, and then we convert that to money. And we Malan Oisim actually is a Minakarka. We remove them from the Karka and pay them money. What are the three cases? Ve'elohen, Bechur Leposher. Number one is if you have a Bechur and a non-Bechur. So we know a Bechur gets a double portion. Poshur and a non-Bechur. We know a Bechur gets a double portion of the inheritance. So let's say there were two brothers, then the Bechur is going to get 2/3 of the Karka and the other one is going to get 1/3. But here's the key thing. If you have Shvach, if you have, for example, let's say they made improvements to the Karka before they divided the inheritance. The din is the Bechor is not entitled to a double portion of the Shvat. He's only entitled to a double portion of the Nechatim as they existed when their father died. So what happens now? So now again, you have the field is worth, let's say, 300 altogether. If it weren't for the Shvach, the Bechor would be getting $200, would be getting two-thirds of it, which is worth 200, and the other guy would be getting 100, which is one-third of it. Now there's Shvach, though. The Shvach has to be split 50-50. How do we do that, then?
We learn it from the fact,
Rashi brings it over here briefly, because the Pasuk says the Bechor gets a double portion, Bechol asher yimotzei loy, in anything that is found in the ownership of the father, meaning not what's potentially going to happen. So therefore, what happens is, so now you're going to have, for example, that again, the Bechor is going to be getting two-thirds of this property, but two-thirds of this property is worth more than it was when the father died. Therefore, we're going to have to figure out the difference in value between when the father died and what it is now, and the Bechor will pay off the Pashut that amount in cash. But he still gets two-thirds of the field.
Well, two-thirds of the property when it was...
That's what we mean, yeah.
Initially.
Yeah. Uksubas ishali yisaimim, and when... Ubalchoyv uksubas ishali yisaimim, the same way when a balchoyv, or a woman's ksuba, is being collected from yisaimim, same idea, in other words, you take the shvach, you take the land with the shvach that's in it, and you reimburse them for the shvach. Ubalchoyv lalakoychas, and the third one is when a balchoyv collects from third-party buyers, from nechasim v'shabadim, same idea. He takes the entire field, and he pays them off for the shvach in cash. So therefore, based on that, yeah. Okay. Question is, me islay. So based on that, that's the deed. Okay. The question is, me islay. Amalei Ravina Ravashi. Lememra the Sava Shmuel Balchoyv Lalakochas. Are you telling me that when it comes to a Balchoyv taking away property from third parties, that me islay Shvach Lalakeach, that he should have to pay the Shvach? Since when is the Lakeach entitled to the Shvach in the first place? Va'amar Shmuel Balchoyv Goyver Es Shvach. We say in the first paragraph we learned that Shmuel says the Baal Chayv collects the Shvach as well. So you might make a distinction whether the Shvach is something, the crops, for example, is it something Magil Tzifayim that's already ready to be picked up on the shoulders, meaning it's basically ready to be harvested, or Shvach She'en Magil Tzifayim, or whether it's completely unripe and it still needs to grow for a while yet. If you're going to make that distinction, but we find such cases come up all the time, and yet Shmuel says that the Baal Chayv is entitled to collect from the Shvach HaMagil HaKsifayim as well. It's not, Rashi explains that if it was completely no longer needs to be in the ground at all, that it's for sure considered payable. And if it's completely unripe, then yeah, that's not really Shvach yet. Shvach HaMagil HaKsifayim is basically ripe, but it needs to grow a little more, maybe it needs to dry out in the field a little more, whatever. We see that Shmuel says you can collect even from that. Now, the answer is, Lo'kasha hoder masik v'kashir aru shvacha. The difference is, one case where we say that Shmuel is saying that you can collect from the Shvach is where the debt is the value of the karka plus the Shvach. So the debt was 150, the land itself is worth 100, and the Shvach is worth 50. So then he's entitled to collect from all of it. The other is where he's only owed the value of the land. The debt is only 100. Yeah. Okay. So, fine. The question is, so what are we saying still? That if he's not owed the full amount of the land plus the shvach, you're saying then that what he does is he takes the field with this shvach hamagil tzifayim, this produce that's still attached to the ground and still needs a few more days to be ripe or whatever, and he reimburses him in money. The problem with that is that works out according to the opinion, which also we learned over there, that even if the lekeach has money, he's not able to pay off the debt. He's not able to give money to the Baal Chayv and take back the karka. The Baal Chayv still has the ability to say, you're a third party, I don't have to deal with you. I want this karka. You have money to pay it off, fine, that's not my problem. Shaper, well then that works out well. He takes the whole karka with the shvach, and that's that. But according to the opinion that the lekeach can always pay off the Baal Chayv, can always pay off the debt and keep the karka, and then he goes back and gets reimbursed by the original loiver. So why should the Baal Chayv have the ability to take the whole karka with the shvach? Why can't this lekeach tell him he have all these zuzi, have a misaluk mil from the kula hara? Look, if I had had enough money to pay off the whole debt, I would have been able to prevent him from taking any part of it. Hashtag the less of the zuzi. Now, granted, I don't have enough money to cover the whole debt. Habli griva da'arava roi shir shvachoi. Why don't you at least leave me part of the land? It is actual land that I bought, equivalent to the shvach. Why should I be obligated to give you the entire land away and you're going to reimburse me for the shvach in cash when instead you could be leaving me some percentage of the capital?
Because
why not?
Doesn't want to.
But why not? I would have had the ability to even prevent you from taking any of this character. If I could have paid off the whole 150, I would have done that. Like this, I don't have enough to pay off the debt. But still, you only owed 100 out of this field, which together with the shvach is worth 150. Take 2/3 of it. Don't take the whole thing. The answer is, hacha ma'askin and kenja shavya niyalei apasiki. No, so we have to answer that. But so again, according to Tosfos, we knew all along that it was an apostasy. We're revisiting that now. According to other Mefarshim, we didn't know it until this point. That it, the case is, he made it to begin with an apostasy. The Amalei lo yahelecha piron elamizu. Where lechachilah, the lawyer told him, you're only going to be entitled to collect from this one. Therefore, he's entitled to the entire field, and the lekeach does not have the ability to say, well, I want to pay you off and keep some part of it, because that's not how an apostasy works. It's under your shibud. It's under your specific shibud to begin with.
Yeah.
And therefore, that's that.
Griva means portion.
Griva means a portion. Yeah. Griva sometimes in the Gemara is used as a synonym for saw, but basically it means a small portion. Yeah.
Oh, saw.
Sometimes, yeah.
Oh, I like that. Like a saw piece, a sawed off piece.
Sa'ah, like a measurement.
Oh, sa'ah.
Sa'ah, like the measurement. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. But that's basically what griva means, a portion.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Give it on.